Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. This week, in part two of Womanity's commemoration of Youth Month through education, we feature conversations from guests who've demonstrated the impact that education has had on their lives and the benefits of education to South Africa as a whole. We commence the program with current ANC Women's League President and South Africa's Minister of Social Development, Badabile Olive Dlamini, who has been involved in social development since 1994. She emphasizes the importance of early childhood development and government's focus on this area.
But one other element that has come in that is going to make a spectacular improvement is early childhood development, because a government has decided to take over early childhood development. It's going to be a public good. There are many things we are trying to change as we grow as government, because we have an experience of 20 years which gives us an opportunity to change the way we were doing things.
I think that experience has really played through, and it shows in that entire development of where we are today, 20 years later, after our first democracy.
But I think my pet subject has always been early childhood development, because the apex priority of this government or administration is education. So if you prepare children from birth, by the time they are at grade 12, they are able to stand on their own. And also the research that has been done by other countries says children that start at an early childhood development level are very strong. They are able to differentiate between wrong and right, and just their style of living is far different from those who did not go to ECD. My younger brothers went to ECD and I didn't, and you can see the difference between me and my younger brother. So even the way they read, the way they talk, the way they are able to think and drill things down shows that long ago they were advantaged. Puzzles, squares, shapes, and everything. We never went through that. We just started at first year, started writing R without having practiced, and be expected to write your name without having written it before. So ECD is my pet subject.
Marianne Lindelwa-Dunjwa is a parliamentarian and chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Health. She considers language as sometimes a barrier with respect to women's education, and looking at a broader sense if we are doing enough to educate women about their rights.
I think we are doing enough. What I think we need to improve on is that we are to ensure that all our laws are in language of choice, so that every woman, irrespective of a language, for instance, in Xhosa, in Setswana, in Sepedi, because if we don't do that, it will only be women that have been fortunate to learn English, which is a medium of instruction. But for us to ensure that women are empowered and understand all their rights and understand why they are to vote and understand why it is important for them to be assertive. When I mean assertive is that go to school, but understand that we are no more minors in terms of what the Constitution is saying in our country, and understand that they have also got that responsibility and a right to raise issues that they are not comfortable with, but also those that they are comfortable with, also those they want to improve. We will be doing, we must ensure that in whatever we do, we ensure that women are exposed to language of their choice. And when they are to read and empower themselves with the laws in Parliament, that is why we always ensure that even when we debate in vernacular, so that we understand that we are not only talking to ourselves, but we are also talking with people outside that are to be empowered on what we are saying, and using our 11 languages. We think that that is very important because it's part of empowerment.
Professor Cheryl Delaray is the Vice Chancellor and Principal of the University of Pretoria. She reflects on gender transformation in academic institutions and the progress women have made to date.
Well, the first issue is numbers. Numbers of women in universities. And one of the successes of our 20 years of democracy can be looked at in those terms. Our incoming class of new first years in 2014, 56% women. And that's something to be celebrated, because if we went back 20 years, it was very different. And so that's wonderful to see the growing diversity in gender as well. But the other way in which it's changed, I think women are participating in a much greater diversity of academic programs. When I was a student, women were mostly clustered in faculties of humanities or faculties of arts or faculties of education, doing what was mostly regarded as the traditional feminine careers. Whereas now, if you walk into the School of Engineering, you'll see a growing cohort of women, and across the board, there is no career where we're not seeing change at the level of gender participation.
Well, I think legislation is a really critical component on change. And in fact, when I was talking to the High Commissioner of Tanzania, she spoke to me about her role when she started at the University of Dar es Salaam. And she said there was the Musoma resolution which mm-hmm. came into play. And she said when she went into university, she said they called women coming into university the flood. And I asked her, I said, well, why is that? Really? And she said it was because of the Musoma resolution mm-hmm. that came through, which opened up those opportunities for women to go directly from high school into university. Mm-hmm. And she said it was a game changer and a life changer for women in Tanzania. Yeah.
Well, we've had a similar experience. You know, since 94, there have been two important, what you could say, policy provisions or constitutional, in fact, these are constitutional provisions. It's in the South African Constitution, which is quite exceptional in the following sense. Not only is the constitutional provision a commitment to freedom from discrimination, but there's also provision for enabling the advancement of women. In other words, what you might describe as equity provisions. And it's that twin commitment that has enabled the growing participation of women in universities as we've seen in the last 20 years. So it's important to acknowledge that it's not about simply saying that we must remove discrimination. But if we want to see significant shifts, we also have to say, well, what more do we need to do to foster and to facilitate the participation of girls and women?
And do you see any other contributing factors other than the legislation and constitutional components in terms of driving the increased access of women coming into the education sector? Because I recall from the Council of Education, there was some statistics around about 2012, where they estimated the ratio of graduates was 60% women to 40% men. Mm-hmm. And I think already you've mentioned that we've got a 56% intake of women in 2014 at the University of Pretoria. So other than legislative components, is there anything else that you think is driving the trend?
You know, change and looking at women's advancement is always a multifaceted or requires a multi-pronged approach, I believe. So changing legislation, the regulatory environment, creates the enablers. But much more needs to happen. We need to also look at our social environment, particularly in the way families and the way in which women and girls and, of course, boys and men are socialized. So while the intake of women is pleasing, as I've described it to you, in many cases what happens later for women and girls is as women take on family responsibilities or have children, we find in our societies women still bear the major responsibilities, the major family responsibilities, not only for children but for often elder relatives and looking after the family as a whole. And I think it's very important that we consider increasing the participation of men in family responsibilities. So I think there's social issues that have to be looked at.
Possibly sort of shifting the gender stereotype.
And role models, of course. You know, as more women succeed, there are more role models and a greater diversity of role models for young girls to see that many options are available. And yes, it is possible for women to have families and to succeed in their careers. And you know, to take on a much greater diversity of career roles, not only the traditional, albeit important roles, that women have occupied.
I almost don't consider that we have traditional roles anymore. Our environment is changing so rapidly.
And that's wonderful, isn't it? So we're not steered into a particular direction. In fact, there are many career pathways open to us as women.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 802.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy, a program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
Today's episode of Womanity, Woman in Unity commemorates Youth Month through a special compilation on education. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Next, Ms. Yvonne Pinky-Possa, parliamentarian and chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Higher Education and Training, talks about building skilled individuals for a sustainable society and how we can develop relevant capabilities.
Dr. Kuli agrees that education is at the center of development, and I'm not only talking about development of the country, but of an inclusive economic development that is aimed at reducing poverty, but also creating jobs so that all the unemployed can be absorbed and be able to work and make a contribution also towards the development of the economy. You are correct to say this world is moving very fast. How are we going to be able to adjust the curriculum so that we catch up with this and we become relevant? Now, what is key, for instance, in South Africa, we have had a summit whereby all the stakeholders, including the vice chancellors, including the student representatives of all the universities and some coming from your TVET colleges, and then other key stakeholders like the Council of Higher Education, SAQA, South African Qualifications Body, all key stakeholders came together to talk about transformation. We have resolutions that we have taken in that conference, and the department is working a program of action to implement. What was key coming from that was also this radicalization of transformation, but also radicalization of change of the curriculum so that it is relevant to today's life.
Now, Mamoloko Kubai, parliamentarian and chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Telecommunications and Postal Services, considers education in terms of formal and informal education.
I think we need to break the education from formal and informal. From the formal based, I think we've done quite enough in terms of accessibility. Today, every child can decide to go to school. I mean, we've got free education in terms of your junior level, where you, when a child in primary, you've got no fee schools, children receive school uniform, books, nutrition in schools. That as a form of ensuring that we've got kids that are kept in school and not taken out of school. Having studied in Vista, we used to even make an argument at the time when we called him Papa Action, Minister of Education, Prof. Why do I forget his name? You see, this thing of calling people with nicknames, you forget that. I'll remember the name now. But when he did the mergers of universities, part of our submission as SASCO at that time, we're saying you are matching apples and bananas. If you take us from University Vista University and you match us with RAU, Rand Afrikaans Universiteit, or IVETS, our needs, our challenges are different. I remember that time we were doing for access, financial exclusion, to say don't put percentage in terms of our accessibility to university and all that. And University of Vets students at that time were doing for extra parking. And we made an example to say, look,
it's a totally different agenda.
It's a total different environment. We don't even have cars to even think about parking. So we are battling just to have, I remember at that time, we're fighting for registration fees not to go up from 800 to 1.5. It was huge for us.
Well, it's nearly double.
I didn't know where I would find it. I saw myself as a student leader at that time that if this is not resolved, I'm in the streets. My future is doomed. So that's what you need to understand when you deal with education, especially at higher education level. But we also have to urge our young people to say, when you have this, go and study, because some of them, they go there, they fail. Because you've got to prioritize education for yourself. The thing, what we need to get out of here, young people, is this thing of entitlement. We need to let them understand that when an opportunity is before you, utilize it. No one owes you anything. No one owes you nothing. You've got to make it yourself. If an opportunity is in front of you, grab it with both hands and utilize it effectively.
Ambassador Sheila Sisulu, Chancellor of the Walter Sisulu University, acknowledges the significance of education for women to empower themselves, but emphasizes the importance of appropriate infrastructure to enable women to contribute to the economy.
Yeah, I think specifically South Africa is doing quite a lot in educating young women. First of all, the constitution demands that there be no discrimination. And I think on the continent in general, there is a recognition that this is important and an effort to open up opportunities for children by governments in, for example, providing free education and free access to education. The challenge, and if here in South Africa and elsewhere, is in attitudes.
Attitudes from staff or attitudes from parents?
Attitudes from society. Let me put it that way. I think attitudes from society still put women in particular categories. A certain education is enough. Those that venture outside of quote unquote the norm, either to be nurses, maybe doctors, teachers, maybe professors, to wish to become astronauts are few and far between. And therefore, children in school, what they see in primary school, particularly, the teachers are mainly women. And the principal is usually a man.
And in the teaching profession, when I had a conversation with the Dean of Education at University of Pretoria, she indicated approximately 70% of teachers are women.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a highly feminized sector.
So the girl child, when they see positions in education from a very early age, nursery school, they are only women. Primary school, mainly women. And high school, some women. So as the authority position grows, women become fewer. As I say, the principal in primary school will be most likely a man, but the deputy could be a woman. It's so where does this come from? It's socialization. That the ambition, therefore, of girls is honed at a very early age, that they will tend to be secondary to their male counterparts. And then you go to university, at university, it becomes a big story in South Africa, and I think elsewhere on the continent, when a woman becomes principal of a university.
Yes, and I think at the moment we've only got two in place
yes.
in South Africa
yes.
being principals
yes.
or mm-hmm. female.
And none come to mind women in other universities on the continent.
But yet, in terms of the education differentials at a university level, so tertiary, we're seeing a disparity between women, mm-hmm. more women studying at university level
yes.
and 40% men. So hopefully in time this is something that's going to shift the demographic further up the hierarchy structures.
Yes, it will. It will shift it. It will shift it, I think, for as long as we don't tend to be thankful for small mercies. And that's one of the problems I have about how we speak about women's achievements. Oh, no, we've done very well compared to whenever, it's improving. Now, we've come from an apartheid system. There's been slavery in the world. It ended, apartheid ended. Okay, there's still a lot that needs to be done. But people are not thankful for little mercies that come from being a democratic country. People are not thankful for little mercies that come from slavery ending. Oppression must stop. And, the attitudes about, don't worry, it's getting better. It can be.
Otherwise it just becomes too labored.
Exactly.
And it's a point of saying enough is enough.
Enough
we
is
have
enough.
A constitutional
yes.
right.
Absolutely, it's a constitutional right. And it can be in drips and drabs.
Ambassador of France to South Africa, Elizabeth Barbier, stresses the importance of education and encouraging girls to think big and not confine themselves to gender stereotypical careers.
I think a lot is being made, clearly, in terms of public discourse on the importance of education, and particularly for women, for girls. Then very often it's the implementation, of course, which is lacking or more difficult. But there is also the degree of motivation of parents for the education of their kids. If I take the example of Kenya, it's quite incredible, the amount, the importance that education has for the parents. And along the roads of Kenya, you see all kinds of small schools all over, and kids walking in their uniforms from, along the roads all over. And you have a feeling that, really investment in education is a priority for parents, even if they don't have much money. But the question is how to get to university, and that is still a problem. But no, you are right. I've met so many brilliant women in university, in scientific fields, and where you don't expect women, even in Europe. And they are very prominent and determined, and very interesting.
You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 802.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today's episode of Womanity, Woman in Unity commemorates Youth Month through a special compilation on education. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Next, former South African Minister Toko Dodiza comments on the benefits of tertiary education and how she continues to enroll in programs self-fulfilling her philosophy of lifelong learning.
I think we do. As you said earlier, the statistics that we're looking at in terms of tertiary education and the access, both for men and women, and the performance, it indicates that we've got more women, firstly in terms of entry, but also even their performance has actually increased. My sense is that what our government has done, particularly giving more support to basic education, to make sure that you capture a lot of young people into schooling, is a very important one. But beyond that, given our socioeconomic situation as a country, to actually have support, you know, like having food at school, you know, school nutrition, in my view, has been a very important and an added benefit to ensure that you can have more and more children in school. At a tertiary level, the support in terms of NSFAS, I know there is a complaint that it's not enough, but it has actually gone a long way to ensure that children who come from disadvantaged communities who wouldn't have been able to access tertiary education today, they are able to do it. And what I found interesting is that where a majority of women have actually gone through schooling and tertiary schooling level, they actually would educate their siblings. I'm not saying men don't do it, but in majority you'll find that a lot of women will do that to make sure that a lot of their siblings would actually benefit from their own education to be able to actually get through to school. And a majority of women put emphasis into education. I mean, in their budget, they would do everything else, but they would make sure that school needs are the first that are met, you know, in the household.
A priority for her children.
So for me, I think as a country, we have done what we could. We could still do more, you know, to ensure that we encourage more and more people to make sure that they actually take education seriously. Not just for themselves alone, but also for the contribution into their society. You raised an important issue about I continued studying even while I was a minister. I mean, part of the reality is that I believe in lifelong learning because things change. If you look at the world today, it wasn't like when I was growing up. But also, if you look at technology, technology changes very quickly. And these are the applications you have to utilize in your working environment. So you have to develop yourself. Otherwise, you would be redundant in the work environment. For me, it was also about decision making. I mean, I was a deputy minister in agriculture, which is an economic sector. So how would I have coped if I didn't empower myself in understanding, you know, economics? Informing yourself about the sector in which you have to operate in, expand your knowledge of it. If you are in a decision-making position, it enables you to look at things differently. Because while you're professionals, within that environment will empower you with knowledge, will give you the necessary recommendation. You must also be able to have an independent mind to reflect on the issues, because you don't only looking at the administrative or the technical issues, but you also have to have the balance in terms of the political issues, not just in your local environment, but globally, and be able to say, what will the impact of this decision be today, not only for South Africa, but also the interlinkages that are there between what we do and what is happening outside. So it became important then, it becomes important even now in the area where I'm in.
Zolani Mokgola, lead singer of Freshly Ground, reinforces the value of education in order to remain a relevant player in whatever career you choose.
I knew that I had to study further. I didn't necessarily know exactly what I wanted to study, but I knew that there was much more to discover. And I mean, I've always loved I've loved the act of learning. You know, I wasn't necessarily a great student. I'm not saying I was, but I do love learning, and so I knew that I wanted to go and further my studies, and I'm so very glad that I did, because not only did I discover yes, you know, and join the band, but it really opened up my mind and my whole world, really, to other people, other cultures. You know, it really gave me such a broad perspective of not only myself kind of facing the rest of the world, but also, yeah, of the world, also how the world sees me as well, might see me. And I would not trade the time that I spent at university for anything. I would encourage everybody, if you can, you know, to study further, for sure.
We close the show with South African Minister of Labour Mildred Oliphant highlighting efforts undertaken by government to promote education to upskill the population, like adult basic education initiatives, demonstrating that it is never too late to learn.
There are bursaries from various departments, but what we have targeted and what we have agreed upon is that together with the Department of Higher Education and Training, we must come up with the skills development for those workers who don't have certain qualifications, because it would be easier to train those people because they already know what is happening in that particular field. So in order to upgrade them, we've said to the Department of Education and Training, let us come up with the program of saying how then can we make sure that these people who have got the experience but unfortunately didn't have either certificates or diplomas, just to get those particular qualifications so that they can be part of the top positions. And immediately we've also said through the employment equity, if there is any vacancy, rather than to go outside and employ the new person, to supervise a person who has been there for almost 10 or 15 years experience, but because he or she doesn't have qualifications, therefore the higher education must kick in, but we have to partner with the very same employers. And what is happening right now at the government level is that there is a Human Resource Development Council that is chaired by the Deputy President that is focusing precisely on the issue of skills development. And I will really encourage women just to come up with the proposals to the Department of Higher Education on what skills do they want to be retrained on, so that particular program will inform the Department of Higher Education in terms of the qualifications of those particular workers.
So for citizens to take it upon themselves to undergo or diagnose what their skills audit is and to present their proposals to the Department of Higher Education.
Yes, that's what I will encourage.
That's a great initiative, to have that adult education in place so that people can upskill themselves, and it's never too late to learn.
No, it's never too late to learn. And I must also say, we're also assisted by the International Labour Organization. because when we go there, employers are part and parcel of that, and we have agreed that we need to have decent work agenda for each and every country so that we can empower the workers of each and every member state who participate in the ILO.
Thank you for listening to today's special compilation. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman and Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.